Mishlei, Perek Ches, the eighth Perek of Mishlei, eighth Perek of Proverbs. We thank our three sponsors for tonight's Beit Midrash programming. Three different sponsors for four shears. But they are Esti Gomez and Family. Thank you to the Gomez's for sponsoring in honor of Jose's, Rav Jose's birthday. Thank you to Elaine Kahn.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Jose. I don't think he's here, but happy birthday to him. Thank you to Elaine Kahn, who's sponsoring tonight's programming in loving memory of her grandfather, Joseph Holtzman. Our learning should be Le'ilui Nishmaso. And then also thank you to Mark Solway in loving memory of his father, Franklin Solway. We'll learn Le'ilui Nishmaso as well. We will keep them in mind as we learn. And we thank them for their sponsorships. Always very well appreciated. Okay. We're at the beginning of Mishlei Perek Ches. And I will, for those of you who aren't savvy like Steve, I don't know if Steve got this time.
It wasn't up when I checked it.
No, I made it public. And I did it a long time ago also, which is not usually what I do. But here, let's see it here. We've got, wrote it down.
Hey, Milton, how you doing, Milton?
I'm good, sir, thank you.
Are you opening up again?
I haven't heard anything.
Okay.
safaria.org/sheets/, let's hope this works, 243. 706. I hope that's the right one. Let's see. Will it work? Anyone else getting it? It's not coming up to me.
Not coming up to me either.
No, it's not coming up, Rabbi.
Let's see. Hold on. I'm looking at it on my computer so that I can bring it up here.
I don't see you anymore now either.
Right, yeah, no, that's okay. Oh, it worked for me now.
Alright, now I got it.
I got it.
Okay, that worked. I don't know why. Oh, maybe I never saved it. Maybe that's why. Either way, here it is. Mishlei Perek Ches, Pasuk Aleph. Now, if you remember last week, the end of Perek Zion was really finishing off Shlomo HaMelech's admonishment of the one who succumbs to his desires to find this harlot and to seek her out and to be seduced by all of her arguments. And now we're sort of shifting gears. As opposed to Shlomo Melch decrying what's so terrible about other thought processes, other ideologies, specifically ones that a person could be seduced into. So here we're talking more about what the Torah is. We've done this before, but never in the ways that he's going to talk about the Torah here. So here he's really making the case for the Torah. And one of the things that and part of what he says here at the beginning is that the Torah is sort of calling out to everyone. It's accessible to everyone. We'll read here and we'll see some of the ideas here. I was actually hoping to get more covered tonight than five psukim, but as it turns out, I have a lot to say. So we'll see how far it takes us. Halo chachma tikra utvuna titein kola. On the one hand, wisdom is calling, understanding is raising her voice. Okay, it's very interesting. So the imagery is very interesting because if you look at the verbs that are being used, halo chachma tikra. So chachma tikra means that wisdom is calling out. When something is calling out, usually it's calling out to a specific person, meaning there's a connection, as we'll see later in the psukim, there's a connection between the wisdom and the person who is being called out to. Utzvuna titein kola, whereas understanding just raises her voice. Doesn't exactly speak to anyone per se. It's not calling out to anyone necessarily, but it is giving out her voice. Barosh Meruim Alei Derech, she takes her stand at the utmost heights. Beis Nesivos Nitzava. So we've talked about this before. Derech and Natzav or Nesivos. Derech is general, right? So here it says she takes her stand at the utmost heights, presumably along the way. It's how it should be. Here it says by the wayside. And then it says Beis Nesivos Nitzava. And she stands firmly at the crossroads. Here it says crossroads. Nesivos could be pathways. We talked about this last week, and we talked about it before. The difference between derech and a nesiv, as Shlomo Melech oftentimes invokes, is the difference between a general highway and a very specific, detailed, exclusive path. Liad sha'arim lefikares, near the gates of the city entrance, and then mevob sachim tarona, at the entrance, the Pesachim, the opening of the gates, going into the city or coming out of the city, she cries out or she shouts. Okay, so this is sort of like an introduction. The Torah is in some ways embodied here. Wisdom and understanding are sort of here being imagined or illustrated as people trying to give over a message. She's screaming it from the rooftops, right? She's screaming over the general highways. She's screaming at the specific little roads. And then she goes to the entryway and she talks to everybody coming in, coming out of the city. There's something, a message, which is seemingly being brought to everyone. So a few things to consider here with the way that Shlomo HaMelech basically presents these psukim is basically, in one way, describing the medium of Torah, right? It's describing the medium or the avenue that the Torah takes in order to get its message across. And I thought this was very interesting because we speak a lot about how to make ideas, really stick. I've talked about different books about this, and this is literally what's going on in these psukim, that Shlomo Melech is depicting or is illustrating the avenues in which the Torah is disseminated. So I thought it was very interesting that in these introductions, you'll see different mefarshim understand different phrases in ways that indicate things that we've talked about, but also things that we haven't yet talked about in terms of that concept of making ideologies given over, making sure people understand them, making the best way to transmit ideologies, the best way to give over certain lessons. Not necessarily the lessons themselves, but the avenues, the mediums, the way that you give them over. So number one here, the Mitzudas David says, Halo chachma tikra. The wisdom is calling out. Rotza lomar, ma'alos ha-chachma. That what does it mean? That wisdom's just calling out, right? As we said before, the word tikra sounds more personable. Tikra means you're calling out to a specific person, right? Kore vayikra, right? We see this verb all the time. It's usually speaking to somebody specifically, right? It's not just like just general voice, as tfuna is. So here it says, Halo chachma tikra, Rotzu lomar says in Sudas David, Malos hachachma haloni keres mipa'as atzma. That the greatness or the advantage, the benefit of, or the I don't know how to say, a mile is like a quality or a positive quality of wisdom is that it's recognizable by itself. It's intrinsically understood. So that's what presumably I would think, I'm not 100% sure. The Mitzudas David is saying that halo chachma tikra is seemingly being said to every single person. When I read these words of the Mitzudas David, what I think of is sort of common sense. Right, it speaks to everyone. Everyone can readily understand or readily relate to what the message is. I mean, you don't have to convince someone of something. When they hear it, they understand it, right? And that's what it means. Halo chachma tikra. Tikra means it calls out to everybody because every single person can understand the advantage or the benefit or the efficacy of the wisdom of the Torah. And that tomar amareha li mashachara, and it's as if she's just saying the things, and people will naturally be drawn after them. Because naturally, as we said, people will understand where they're coming from, they'll relate to them. And this is something that that Chip and Dan Heath talk about in Made to Stick. I'm going to be talking about a few things that they talk about here. We've quoted this book before. I don't know if you can see me anymore. Some people can in the bottom right corner. You can still see me. There's a book here, Made to Stick. I don't know if you can still hear see me here. Here, Made to Stick, little orange book here with some duct tape. All about the concept of why some ideas survive and others die. And there are six different different ideas, and we're going to actually touch on three or four of them today. So number one is credibility, and this is really from the introduction of the book, or really the first chapter. Credibility: how do we make people believe our ideas? When the former Surgeon General C. Everett Koop talks about the public health issue, most people accept his ideas without skepticism, right? He's the public health official. But in most day-to-day situations, we don't enjoy this authority. Sticky ideas have to carry their own credentials. We need ways to help people test our ideas for themselves. A try before you buy philosophy of the world of ideas, meaning when we want to make something stick, they have to be something that people can understand, something that people relate to and say, oh yeah, I've understood that. I can get behind that. That makes sense to me. Meaning it's something that they can understand. They can really work through themselves. When we're trying to build a case for something, most of us instinctively grasp for hard numbers. Right? We try to say, it's because of this, it's because of that. You give statistics. The truth is, but in many cases, this is exactly the wrong approach. In the sole U.S. presidential debate in 1980 between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter. Sorry. Reagan could have cited innumerable statistics demonstrating the sluggishness of the economy. He could have, said a bunch of numbers. Instead, he asked a simple question that allowed voters to test for themselves. Before you vote, ask yourself if you are better off today than you were 4 years ago. Perhaps one of the most iconic messages of any presidential debate. But it's because its simplicity drew the person to make that their own self-assessment. Like, yes, 4 years ago was like this, and now I'm like that. So it's self-validating, or it's a statement which allows the person to figure out on their own that something has credibility. And that reminded me, and this is what the pasuk reminded me of when the Mitzvot David says, "Haloni keres mi pa'as atzma," meaning it's recognizable. People understand it. People know what you're talking about, based just simply on the fact that it's so relatable, right? They don't need you to convince them of it. They don't need to be given any statistics about it. They don't have to go to any seminars about it. When you say wisdom of the Torah, people understand it if you give it over properly. If you give over the wisdom of the Torah, then they will properly understand what it's all about, and they'll relate to it. They'll understand it. Of course, it depends who's giving it over. But when you give over the Torah properly, people can relate to it. They don't need you to convince them. My father oftentimes used to say this. He says that, easier said than done, but he used to tell me, when I was working in NCSY, he used to say something like, don't try to make up different svaras, and don't try to make up different things, that you get from other places, because the Torah can sell itself, right? As long as you give over the Torah properly, it sells itself, right? Hashem made an unbelievable book. You have to have a certain level of emunah, a certain level of faith in the fact that the Torah itself, as its God-given gift to mankind, can prove itself. You don't need to prove the Torah to anybody. And you should never feel like you should be defensive over what the Torah says. And this is similar to what we're saying here. Credibility comes from the Torah's wisdom itself. The Malbim takes this in a different direction. Halo chachma tikra, that wisdom calls out to each person. And this is neged mash ha'azona tavo. This is in contrast to what the prostitute said in Perek Zayin. In chapter 7, we saw the prostitute. How did she come to this person? Tavo b'choshech u'ba'afela. She came with darkness and with even darker darkness, right? Dusk, right? It wasn't very clear. It was sort of murky. Halo ha'chachma tikra. The chachma, what does it say about the chachma? It's screaming from the rooftops. It calls out to everybody. We've got nothing to hide. There's no trickery involved here. There's no wool over your eyes. This is all out in the open for everybody to see. The Torah is not hiding anything. If anyone wants the Torah, Baruch Hashem, now with technology, even more so, you can open up an art scroll, you can go online, you can hear Shiurim from day till night. Everything is accessible. The Torah is not hiding anything from anyone. Ukvar hispar, can you see us called Katan Mikriya? This is the sort of contrast in the Pesukim. And then he says, Hachachma ba milamala umikubeles me'es Hashem no sein hachachma. That on the one hand, wisdom comes from Hashem, and He's the one that gives over wisdom. V'hi tikra el ha'adam. That's what calling out to every person. Sheyishma l'chukei hachachma v'kav osam. That a person should listen because it comes from Hashem. V'atzvuna titein kola. The end of the pasuk means understanding gives over its voice. Ki hi yotzeis misechel ha'adam. Because tzvuna, understanding, comes from a person's own common sense through their own intelligence. A person has the capacity for understanding, right? Chachma is sort of like a body of wisdom which is given over. God knows how to do things and He tells us how to do them. But when it comes to tvuna, so that comes from the own person, a person's own psyche, a person's own intelligence. And then he says the following: "V'ha'adam yargish hakol hazeh b'ma'amakei nafsho." This fascinating line: a person feels yargish; he feels it in the depths of his soul. V'hu yikra el hatvuna v'yotzi osami sichlo. That the person it comes out of his understanding because they just feel it inside. There's some kind of feeling, some kind of emotional pull that comes through when they understand the Torah, davar mitoch davar, right? Things that can apply in other circumstances. And this leads me to two other elements of the Heath brothers made to stick, different avenues of making something memorable or making something's the best mediums of giving over a message. First is concreteness. And this is specifically through the contrast to the harlot, to the prostitute, right? What was the medium of the prostitute? The medium of the prostitute was darkness, murkiness, unclarity, a disclarity. You don't exactly know what's going on, and that's how she's able to swoop in, right? There's a lack of clarity we talked about a few weeks ago. A person doesn't pause to think about things, and it's specifically that lack of clarity that lends to the person becoming persuaded, the person becoming seduced, because they're not really thinking clearly about what's going on. In contrast to that, says the Malbim, the Torah is very clear. It's out in the open, right? Tikra befarhesya. It's public. It's accessible. Everyone knows exactly what it is. You don't have to guess. And this is the concept that Chip and Dan Heath talk about called concreteness. When you're giving over an idea, it's got to be concrete. What does it mean, concrete? It can't be hazy. And this is something I have a pet peeve about this. When I hear other people talking, especially, people who claim to be intellectuals or pseudo-intellectuals or politicians, this is towards the top of my list of pet peeves. What does it mean, concreteness? How do we make our ideas clear? We must explain them in our ideas in terms of human actions, in terms of sensory information. This is where so much business communication goes awry. Mission statements, synergies, strategies, visions, they're often ambiguous to the point of being meaningless. I know people have experience with this. Word salads and general phrases and buzzwords and catchphrases and things to hit the right notes, but really don't mean anything. How many times do you hear a politician talk about a certain idea, but you have no idea what they're talking about? And they'll just talk and talk and talk and talk. Or businesses talk about how flowery their vision of their product is and what it does for people, but you don't actually know what it does. Like, they don't make it concrete and tangible. Says the Heath brothers, naturally sticky ideas are full of concrete images. Ice-filled bathtubs. He's referencing different stories he's told in the book. Apples with razors. And this is talking about, by the way, familiar with, there's always this fear that parents have that on Halloween, their kids' candy is going to be filled with dangerous items inside of it. So the truth is, statistically, it almost never has happened in the history of the world. Nowadays, people do it because it's like a shtick now. Now, people, it's happened, but before it became a fad in the last few years, it was a big myth, and apparently people were always afraid of it. And it's because of the stickiness of the nightmare. Apples with razors. Because our brains are wired to remember concrete data. In Proverbs, which is what we're talking about, abstract truths are often encoded in concrete language. Now, he's not talking about Mishlei, he's talking about general Proverbs. A bird in hand is worth two in the bush, right? People know what that means, right? You have something in your hand, you're not going to give up what's in your hand to go try to get two things in the bush, right? Speaking concretely is the only way to ensure that our idea will mean the same thing to everyone in our audience, right? If you speak with very tangible terms, things that people understand, things that cannot be misconstrued or hazy in a person's mind. If you remember Perek Zion, which we've done the last few weeks, the prostitute had made maybe five different arguments to the young man who was being seduced, and each one of them was a little ambiguous. What exactly was she talking about? She said, like, it's a mitzvah to come with me. What does it mean, it's a mitzvah? There was something about karbanos. There was something about not being caught. There was something about how he's not going to succumb to it. There was something about the fact that she's being friendly and she's not out to do anything wrong to him. Right? There are a lot of hazy ideas that don't really speak directly to the point. And I'll be candid with you about a specific political issue that always drives me crazy in this arena, and that is abortion. And I'm not getting political, but if anyone tries to ever make the case in favor of abortion, they'll never talk about what they're doing to the baby, right? I don't know if anyone's ever noticed this. They'll always talk about general terms like women's health or services or medical advancement, or they'll never talk about what they do to the baby. And, you know, obviously we're Jewish and we have certain leniencies for very extenuating circumstances. But in general, I think it's pretty obvious to all of us, you can't kill babies. I mean, that's an obvious point. And yet whenever someone makes the argument that they're in favor of abortion, they'll never actually talk about the concrete idea of abortion. And that's, I always think about that when I hear people talk about abortion, because it's the most clear-cut case where someone can't make anything concrete lest it sound really harsh. And it comes up all the time with people trying to make arguments where they're not very concrete. And sometimes, if you don't know what you're talking about, and sometimes I fall into this trap, you don't really know what you're talking about, so you'll oftentimes very much make hazy the image or make blurry the point that you're trying to make because you don't really know what you're saying. And oftentimes, if I'll do something like that, I'll say, I don't really know, but it's something along these lines, in order to make sure that people know that I don't know the concrete answer, but oftentimes I can give them a general picture. So this is the concept of concreteness. And I think that's part of what the medium of the Torah is here, according to the Malbim. The Malbim is saying that the Chachma Tikra Befarhesya, the Torah is talking out in the open. It's clear to everyone who wants to know what it's talking about. It's not blurry. It's clear and public. As opposed to the Zona, the prostitute was Becholshech V'Hafeila. She was hidden. She was murky. She was unclear. You don't really know what was going on there. And that's how she was able to seduce the young man. Secondly, we saw from the Malbim this concept of tvuna, of understanding the Torah as clarity, and the tvuna is something that comes internally. And he uses this very powerful phrase, ha'adam yaragish hakol hazeh b'ma'amake nafsho, right? That he feels the voice, he feels the inside in the depths of his soul. And this is something that the Heath brothers also talk about in terms of giving over an idea. You have to have certain emotions, right? In order to get somebody to feel something, to understand it, to remember something, it has to hit home emotionally. How do we get people to care about our ideas? We make them feel something. In the case of movie popcorn, we make them feel disgusted by its unhealthiness. The statistic 37 grams of fat does not elicit any emotions. Research shows that people are more likely to make a charitable gift to a single needy individual than to an entire impoverished region. Meaning, you could say as much as you want that this country is poor, but if you look at a person and you see that the person doesn't have food, so that's a lot more impactful. And that's also why the Rav talks about, if you remember, in the Kinos, many of the Kinos are about individuals. Even though obviously Tisha B'Av was a national tragedy. It was a national tragedy, not only because we lost the base of nation, but because people had many difficult situations that they had to deal with. En masse, they had to leave their homes, they had to, you know, they lost their possessions, they were tortured, whatever the situation was. And yet, many of the kinos talk about specific individuals. Because when you talk about specific individuals, you create a certain emotional connection to them. And that's what it's saying here. To give to the poor is much more beneficial if you talk about a specific individual as opposed to a general idea. We are wired to feel things for people, not for abstractions, connected to concreteness also. Sometimes the hard part is finding the right emotion to harness. For instance, it's difficult to get teenagers to quit smoking by instilling in them a fear of consequences, but it's easier to get them to quit by tapping into their resentment of the duplicity of big tobacco, which is another political statement a little bit, but sort of you have to find something which is emotional for a person. We're going to see actually soon a different take on the smoking angle. Actually, the end of the class, we're going to see a different take on the smoking epidemic, some would call it. But that's it for the Heath brothers, I think. Yeah. So we did three out of the six. Three out of the six categories of how to make an idea sticky. We did concreteness, credibility, and emotionality. That number one, it has to be, we saw credible. And how do we make it credible? Now, we have it easier because we know it comes from Hashem. So we have the greatest credibility that there is. But if you remember, the Mitzudas David doesn't say any, doesn't make an argument from authority that because we know it's from Hashem. He says because it's, that it's nikeres mipas atzma. We know it because the words themselves, the wisdom themselves speak to what, to the relatability of the concepts. And that's what's really so. That's what hits home so well about the Torah and the wisdom. And then we talked about concreteness. In order for something to stick with a person, they have to hold on to something. They have to be. It has to be tangible. It has to be clear. It can't be hazy or general or ambiguous. And then last, we just talked about emotionality. That for a person to remember something, they have to feel something about it. That's what's really going to get them to buy into a message. The three other ones, because I know everyone is wondering, the three other categories of making something stick: simplicity. You can't have too many ideas, otherwise it's going to get too crowded and people can't remember so many things at once. Unexpectedness. If something is out of the ordinary, you didn't expect it, it's something that really sticks with you because it has, again, an emotional content to it. And then lastly, stories. People relate to stories. They can connect to different parts of it because they know somebody that happened to or it happened to them like that. So stories are also a very helpful way to make things stick. Very helpful book for drushas if anyone ever needs some help. Either way, the Ralbag has another take on this. The Ralbag is really talking about the next parts of the psukim, but here he quotes the first pasuk and then goes from there. Utzvuna titein kolab, understanding gives over its voice, as we saw in the first pasuk. Likro lahem, to speak out to them. Uchadei sheyishmu dvareha, and in order for people to hear her voice, hein omdos barosh meromim ale darech. This is the second pasuk. They stand on the hilltops over the highways, the general paths. Directions. Lahashmiya divrayim la overim v'lashavim v'lahayishirim ulahayishiram. Hayishirim? Not really sure what this means. It means to straighten them out, but I don't know how to say the word. Lahayishiram, maybe? Either way, what it means is that the wisdom speaks at the hilltop and speaks down to all those passersby and says to straighten them out. El haderach she'elchu ba. So that they go on the path which they should be going on. V'hamakom she'efshar she'yikra taos, and to tell them which places you could get mistaken by, right? You're sort of looking down from the hilltop and seeing where people are going, and say, don't go over there, don't go over there. Go there instead. L'fi she'yesh bo nesivos rabos, because there are many different paths, right? And this is the next part. Hi nitzava. Sham lahoros eze derech yelchu. She's looking down, wisdom is looking down, from on top and seeing where people are going. they don't necessarily know. They see all these different ways, all these different paths, all these different roads that they can take. The wisdom is on top and saying, go over here, go over there. That's the Torah. The Torah is our guide. It's our compass to teach us the right direction. And this reminded me of a piece from Maseilas Yesharim. But let's just see Rashi for a second. Rashi tells us, how does he understand this pasuk? Barosh Meromim. This is on a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara doesn't itself explain much more than the Pesukim's words. So Rashi tells us, Barosh Meromim, Mistalek B'mechuva Os, B'machav Os, that a person is hidden, is removed in this hidden place, right? You're learning Chachma, Barosh Meromim. It's a lofty place without other people there. Ulevasof ali derech, but in the end of the day, you'll be out on the ground with other people. Moreh hora le'ein kol. So this is very interesting because it's not exactly how the Ralbag understands it. It's not exactly how the pasuk sounds to be talking about. But Rashi says at the beginning, when you're on your first your path to Torah, it's somewhat hidden. It's elusive. I think the Maharsha talks about this even more, that it's not something you fully understand, but that by the end of the day, you'll understand it so well, you'll be able to teach other people how to navigate with the Torah. This reminded me of a famous parable, a famous mashal. It's not Shlomo Melech's mashal, but it's the Ramchal's mashal. Maybe people are familiar with it if they've learned Maseilas Yesharim, the Path of the Just. I think Milt told me he recently got this book, so if you come across this in chapter number 3, you'll have already seen it. This is a garden planted for amusement, right? So he's talking about some kind of analogy. Commonly loaned to the nobleman. The hedges of plants are arranged in many intricate walls, among them many confusing and interlacing pathways, all of which appear similar. It's what we would call nowadays a corn maze. The goal is to reach the lookout tower in the middle of the maze. But among these pathways, some of them truly lead one to the tower, while others deceive him, leading him astray away from it. One who walks between the paths is not at all capable of seeing or knowing if he's walking a correct path or a deceptive one. For each one appears similar. There is no noticeable difference whatsoever to the eye beholding them. You can't tell where you're going. He will not reach the tower unless he knows the correct path through prior experience and visual familiarity by having entered it before and successfully reaching the goal, namely to the tower. One standing on the lookout tower, on the other hand, can see all the pathways before him and discern between the true and the false ones. He is in the position to warn those walking in them and tell them, this is the path to take. He that is willing to believe him will reach the designated place. But he who is not willing to believe him, but would rather follow his own eyes, will certainly remain lost and fail to reach it. Right? It's basically exactly how the Ralbag is explaining these psukim. That wisdom is standing up top and looking down at all these pathways and saying, you got to go this way, you got to go that way. But you have to be able to discern through trusting those who have already reached that tower. This is specifically in the Maseilas Yesharim's view, referring to Chazal, referring to the rabbis who have given us a certain pathway to teach us how to navigate these different paths. The next source clearly didn't make it on here. But it is, again, a source from Maseilas Yesharim, not from Maseilas Yesharim, from Rav Hirsch's book that Savvy Steve let me borrow, gave to me, I don't know. In page 52, it's on the actual website, but I guess it doesn't pick up over here. And he's talking about these psukim. And if you notice, the psukim go through different places where Chachma is, right? It starts up on the top, and then it goes down to the pathways, and then it goes to the entranceway. So Rav Hirsch says the following. The knowledge which in our Proverbs is called wisdom is not the heritage of a privileged or educated class. Now this is very interesting because you have to sort of put your mind in the framework of Rav Hirsch, or the time period of Rav Hirsch, and those who are in the 19 letters would understand this, that he's talking to a people that are very well educated. And there's a big difference between people in the big cities and in the small little shtetlach who are not very well educated. So Rav Hirsch is saying, wisdom that the pasuk's talking about here is tikra. It's speaking to everybody, right? It's not speaking to any specific person. It's not the heritage of a privileged or educated class. Neither is it intended to offer a substitute to those whom fate has denied a share of material fortunes, meaning it's not for the rich. And so, as opposed to what Tevye thinks, right? And so, once the fortune has been attained, to withdraw into a corner, having again become dispensable and superfluous. It's not some way to get money. No more is it a science, an academic subject, far removed from the strivings and actions of ordinary life on earth. It's not just another subject to be studied like science or math. Quite to the contrary, it relates directly to the entire fullness of life on earth, including every internal and external relationship of the individual and of society as a whole. This is what wisdom, by illumination, penetration, and formulation through its challenging spirit, wishes to direct. This is why, and here comes our part of the psukim, this is why wisdom goes out right into the middle of the vitality and activity of life, right up to the elevations which overlook the ways of the mortals, and right onto the centers, meaning the city gates, where the paths of light meet and cross. This is why it looks for disciples at the gates of public life, at the entrance of a city's community, and at the doorstep of the home, in the domesticity of individuals and families. As if to say, wisdom applies in all places to every person. And Rav Hirsch has a similar idea, which I once spoke about at the early minyan on Shabbos, which is, why is it that the Aron has poles in it? You know, the Pasuk tells us you're never allowed to remove the poles from the Aron Kodesh, right? It says, "Batabos Aron Yuabadim Lo Yosur Mimenu," that these poles that would carry the Aron Kodesh that had to always be in the Aron. So the question is why? All the other kalim, all the other, the mizbeach, the shulchan, the other mizbeach, they all have poles in them, and when you put them down, you take the poles out. Why do we need the poles in them if they're not moving? Says Rav Hirsch, in order to teach us that the Torah is to be taken everywhere. The Torah is not situated in the Beis HaMikdash because it's supposed to stay in the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, the literal box, which is called the Aron Kodesh, is in the Beis HaMikdash. But what it represents, the concepts, the laws, the ideas of the Torah, that has to be taken with us wherever we go. And that's why the poles are symbolically placed in the Aron. They stay there. They're not allowed to move in order for people to know that the Torah is for every single place and every single situation. And that's what it means here in the Psukim and Mishle, that it calls out from the rooftops, it calls out from the low ground in the paths, it calls out from the city centers. Wherever people are, that's where wisdom calls out, because the Torah can be accessible and is relevant for everything and every place that we live in. Okay, last two Psukim for tonight. Shlomo Melech continues and he says, this is in the Torah's voice, right? He says, the Torah goes here, goes here, goes here, and then shouts, right? She shouts out. What does she shout out? And this shouting, this message of the Torah is actually going to go on for a dozen or so psukim, but we'll only do two of them tonight in order to see who she's talking to. So says Mishle, says Shlomo Melech, Aleichem Ishim Ekra. O men, I call to you. The Koli El Bnei Adam. And my voice is to Bnei Adam. What's the difference between Bnei Adam and Ishim? We'll see soon. Havinu Pisaim Arma. O simple ones, learn shrewdness or trickery. But here it means really discernment. Uksilim Havinu Lev. And fools, make your minds or your hearts. We've talked about how Lev, my heart, could be a reference to the mind. So Havinu, make sure that you understand with your heart. So the Alshech says the following. Va'asher tikra v'titen kola. Right, we had said the psukim from beforehand. The pasuk says, asher tikra v'titen kola. Right, Chachma says, calls out, and Tvuna gives its voice. Hu lomar aleichem ishim. Right, specifically speaking to these people. Lomar aleichem hanikraim ishim chashuvim haoskim b'chalkei Torah. In ish, the word ish it connotes prominence, importance, some kind of nobility. This is a big concept that people bring up in 2 weeks' time, next week's parsha in Shlach, right? When Moshe Rabbeinu says Shlach lecha anashim, send for yourself anashim. What's anashim? Anashim are ishim chashuvim. They're important people. These people that Moshe Rabbeinu sent out were not these lowly, you know, know-nothings. These were formidable leaders of the Jewish people that he sent out. So here too, ishim chashuvim ha'oskim mechalkei Torah. They're the talmidei chacham, they're the gedolim, they're the important people in society, in the Jewish world. Hanizkarim ekra lenochach, so you speak opposite them. Ube'etzem ki liatem, and specifically because you belong to me. You mean you're not belong to me, but you are committed to me. They're the wise ones. And with the way that I'm speaking to you and calling out to you, and my voice will come to, will somehow get to Bnei Adam, that they are not necessarily connected to anyone important. Rak b'shituf sham b'nei Adam. Kipsam uksil misholo lechachma. And it's not clear to me what he really means. It sounds to me, however, what it means is that we need the ishim, we need these people of prominence to be b'shituf sham b'nei Adam. That they have to be somehow in partnership with these other people. Kipsam uksilim misholo lechachma. Those who don't have chachma have to somehow partner with these other people that do have chachma. I'm not sure if I understood that correctly. It's the only way I can make sense of what he means. But what I think it strikes to is a very interesting piece, which the Heath brothers do not talk about, but which I think is actually very important, and that is the social nature of messaging. That people who don't necessarily have relations with, who don't have necessarily relationships with people, are not going to easily accept or receive message or instruction from that person. I think my personal opinion is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, way to effectuate a change or to really give over a lesson, to teach someone something, is when you have a relationship with that person, right? As the Mishnah tells us about Aaron HaKohen, right? Ohev shalom v'rodev shalom, ohev zabrios mekarvan laTorah. You should love someone, and through that love, mekarvan laTorah. You don't love them so that you can get them to Torah, but ohev zabrios, when you love people for who they are, mekarvan laTorah. Naturally, the progression is that if you love them, they're just going to want to be like you. They're going to want to have things in common with you. And the similar when it comes to giving over some kind of advice. The person that you listen to, and people know this from their own experience, you don't need me to tell you this, but the people you listen to are the people that you have a relationship with. You don't go up to a stranger necessarily, depending on the topic, and just trust everything they say. You have to actually know who they are, at least know about them, if not actually know about each other. And through that trust and through that dependency, you'll come to a way that you can really speak to each other in these very important ways. And this is, I think, something that Malcolm Gladwell speaks about more. I told you I'm on a Malcolm Gladwell kick as of late. So here he has his own take on what's going wrong or what was successful in the smoking epidemic. This is a book called The Tipping Point, which I had before. The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, a very interesting book. Also speaks about the stickiness of ideas, but more in terms of fads and trends and how they continue throughout the world and how little things can really turn things into to big movements. And he says here, the significance of the smoking personality, I think, cannot be overstated. If you bundle all of these extroverts traits together, defiance, sexual precocity, honesty, impulsiveness, indifference to the opinion of others, sensation seeking, you come up with an almost perfect definition of the kind of person many adolescents are drawn to. And he's giving a couple examples that he talked about in the book. Maggie the au pair and Pam P on the school bus and Billy G with his Grateful Dead records were all deeply cool people. But they weren't cool because they smoked. They smoked because they were cool. The very same character traits of rebelliousness and impulsivity and risk-taking and indifference to the opinion of others and precocity that made them so compelling to their adolescent peers also make it almost inevitable that they would also be drawn to the ultimate expression of adolescent rebellion, risk-taking, impulsivity, indifference, and to others and precocity. The cigarette, right? This is sort of, the cigarette was not, and he'll say it here, this may seem like a simple point, but it is absolutely essential in understanding why the war on smoking has stumbled so badly. Over the past decade, the anti-smoking movement has railed against the tobacco companies, which is what the Heath brothers talked about, for making smoking cool, and has spent untold millions of dollars of public money trying to convince teenagers that smoking isn't cool. But that's not the point. Smoking was never cool. Smokers are cool. That's what he talks about. It's this point reading so true to me, not because I have anything to do with smoking, God forbid, but because movements and messages and lessons aren't taught through, oftentimes are not taught through the content of the message, but usually the messenger. And that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. It's not necessarily the content always, but it's how the content is packaged. We've talked about the fact that wisdom has to be credible. We know that it's from Hashem, but also we have to have faith, we have to have the emunah that the Torah itself is intrinsically relatable, is intrinsically wise, and people will, if they understand it correctly, will understand it just because it rings true to them as people. That's how the Mitzvot David says it. And that's why it's so important for the Torah's message to just be heard somehow. How are you going to hear it? Once you hear it, it's going to be credible. So what are the ways that you can hear it? First, we talked about concreteness. It has to be concrete. Make things tangible for the person so that they can see, they can feel, they can relate to what it is that you're talking about, and don't keep it in some ambiguous, hazy, sort of blurred vision of what the idea is. Bring it down into the real world. And secondly, you have to have emotions. It has to be something which is emotional draw. It has to be something which people care about. Some kind of story, some kind of cause, something that people really are bothered by or excited about. It has to be something which really strikes some kind of emotional chord. That's what the Malbim was talking about. And then we talked about the concept of Mesilas Yesharim, a person who's able to help you navigate through difficult ways. The Rav Hirsch talked about how people have to know that the Torah is accessible and relatable in every aspect of life. It's not just for the people in shul, and it's not just to figure out how to daven. But when you sit at your kitchen table and you talk to your kids, or when you're sitting in on the subway or the train or your car, there are ways to go about life in all of these circumstances that the Torah has something to say for. And then lastly, as Malcolm Gladwell says, perhaps echoing the concept of the Al-Sheikh, that when it comes to giving over messages, perhaps one of the greatest tools that we have is to make a relationship with a person. And through that, as we know from Aaron Cohen, Oeves Abrios Makarvin La Torah, the love you have for a person, the trust and the vulnerability you have with one another, that's what's going to make ultimately the Makarvin La Torah. That's what's going to bring them closer by the fact that you love them and have that relationship with them. So those are just some ways, not necessarily about what the wisdom is, but how the wisdom is given over, the medium in which the wisdom can make an impression on somebody, and the way that they can understand and keep with them how it is you give over those messages. Okay, so Shkayach, a lot to digest over there, but I think a very important message is not only for rabbis, but for parents, for teachers, for friends, anyone who has some kind of responsibility, for a customer service agent, you know, anyone who's talking to other people and trying to get them to understand the benefits of what they're selling. Obviously, only if it's a true thing and a sincerely good thing. We're not talking about used car salesmen over here. We're talking about Torah. But the point is, it's not just about the content. It's also about the context and the messenger that gives it over. That's important. So these are just some ideas that Shlomo Melch points out can be very effectual in terms of giving over messages properly and efficiently. Okay, everyone should have a great night. Tomorrow afternoon, Parsha at 1:30. And then we have the event with Pastor Plummer at 8:15. So we'll see you then. I don't think my wife is having her class tomorrow because of that. But you'll have to wait for the email to figure that one out. Okay, Shkayach, have a good night.